Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. As we begin the holiday season, we wanted to check in with those on the front lines in the fight against hunger. In some of the wealthiest areas of the country, demand for food is on the rise. According to Feeding America, more than 37 million people struggle with hunger in the United States. That includes 11 million children. Today's guests dedicate their lives to feeding people and raising awareness about this growing crisis. Leslie Baccio is the CEO of Second Harvest of Silicon Valley. According to the organization, one in 10 people in Silicon Valley receive food from Second Harvest. Leslie is former COO of the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. One in 5 residents in San Francisco and Marin need food assistance. And Leslie Baccio joins us in studio. Hi, Leslie. Thanks for coming in. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Great to be here.
Great to have you. Mary Risley is founder of Food Runners, a grassroots organization that picks up excess food from businesses and delivers it to agencies feeding the hungry in San Francisco. Food Runners, which Mary started back in 1987, has over 250 active volunteers, and you can find out how you can get involved if you'd like to do that at yourcallradio.org. And Mary also joins us in studio. Hi, Mary. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Great to have you. Well, I want to ask you both, just based on the work that you do, Mary, especially, you've been doing this for so long. What has really changed over the years? I mean, we do these shows a couple times a year, and the numbers seem to remain pretty consistent.
What's changed over the years in terms of need for hunger for food? I don't know really. But to me, there are so many more people on the street. Mm-hmm. So many more people on the street. It's a housing crisis, mm-hmm. and you see it when you drive by Clyde, when you drive by any of the soup kitchens. There's lines and lines of people waiting for food.
Right, and I'm sure people, because we air outside of the Bay Area. This is a national story about the homeless crisis in San Francisco and the Bay Area.
Exactly.
A very wealthy part of the country. Well, what about you, Leslie? What stands out for you in terms of the changes you've seen over the years?
Well, I think Mary's right that certainly here the housing crisis is what is just creating such an impossible situation for so many low-income people, so many low-wage workers. And I think the change we've seen is that we are feeding more and more people who are working. Maybe they're even working multiple jobs. But you can imagine if you are a low-wage earner, and these are the folks that are kind of working in jobs that are really the backbone of our community, many people struggle to be able to pay their rent and still afford food.
The Urban Institute just came out with a new report that found hunger in the suburbs is on the rise.
That's right. I mean, what we see on the peninsula is, even though we do have certainly a lot of homeless people, more and more what we see is people just in unstable housing. So maybe people are couch surfing, maybe multiple families are living together in a single unit, maybe people are living in a garage, more and more people are living out of RVs. And we certainly are serving all of those folks, but we're also serving a lot of people that are housed and, again, are just struggling to be able to make that rent payment. And so often, I'll meet folks whose rent has just gone up maybe a couple hundred dollars a month, and that is making the difference between them being able to have a budget for food or not.
So given that demand is up, as the CEO of Second Harvest of Silicon Valley, again, one in 10 people in Silicon Valley receive food from your organization. How are you all keeping up with demand?
Well, it's a challenge, truly. I mean, right now we are really focused on taking more of our food distributions from monthly or bi-monthly distributions to weekly, because we know people need groceries weekly. We're fortunate to be here in California where so much fresh produce is grown. So about half of what we distribute is produce. If you came to one of our food distributions, it would kind of look like a mini farmer's market where you'd see lots of different items of produce. We also purchase items we can't always get donated, like chicken, eggs, milk, kind of critical staples. So for us, the challenge is both the logistics challenge of bringing all that food in, using volunteers to sort it and repack it quickly to get it out to sites, but also the challenge of just doing more.
You are in another incredibly wealthy part of the country. You're surrounded by tech billionaires and tech companies. Are they involved in contributing to the food bank?
We are fortunate that 65% of our donations come from individuals, and we also have strong relationships with our corporate partners. We do have many individuals in the community that are extremely generous. We have many tech companies that are willing to really step up and increase their commitment. But of course, we need to do more. And I'm always surprised at the number of people I meet who are very smart people who just are not aware of the need that exists, because it's very possible, especially in the peninsula, to live and work where you might never actually run across people who are very visibly in need.
Hmm. And we'll talk about that later in the show, just about how dire the situation is and what we can do to raise awareness about it. Mary, tell us a little bit about Food Runners, which you started back in 1987. There's a video on your website about how your organization works, where you pick up excess food from businesses and then you deliver it to various agencies that feed the hungry in San Francisco.
So a good example is the other day I got a call from Park 55, a hotel down on the back door. The loading dock is on Mason Street. And I went down myself and my 40-year-old Alfa Romeo. And I got seven trays of sandwiches. And I took them to the Tenderloin Rec Center, where the low-income kids could take them home, could eat them or take them home. Mm-hmm. So what we have is volunteers that volunteer an hour a week, and they might do something like that, pick up from whoever has excess food and take it directly to where it's going to be eaten. So and a big thing that we're getting now, talking about tech companies, is we have many volunteers that won't go south of Market, so we're now getting trays and trays of leftover food from companies like Twitter and LinkedIn and Google, all the companies south of Market, where they put out food for their employees and then give it to food runners, which is really helping a lot.
Wow. Because a lot of these companies provide free food to their employees. And
masses of it.
Huge amounts, right.
Exactly.
And then that's one of the reasons why the employees don't have to leave, because they always have food there. And so you are connected with them.
Yes.
What can you talk about the laws behind this? Can any, like, if a company's listening right now, or an organization that feeds their employees on a regular basis and has leftover food and wants to get involved?
So the story is that the donor has been protected by a California state law since 1989 and federally since 1996. So there's no fear of liability. What happens is, let's say you have had a kind of warm chicken noodle thing and you left it out for 6 hours and then you donated it, and by then it's gone bad. Where we take it, they're not going to serve it. Mm-hmm. If it smells bad, they're not going to serve it. So, and nobody in this country has ever sued because they got sick from turned food. It's not a valid excuse. And another really interesting thing is David Chuth put through a bill that started in January 1917 that all foods that have reached their expiration date or sell-by date can be donated.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, we have a society that thinks if it says November 17th on it, you have to throw it away.
Right.
No, smell it. Open it up, smell it. Donate it. If it goes bad at one of the shelters, they're not going to serve it.
So I'm looking at the brochure that you brought in today, and there's a number of regular food donors, restaurants like Delfina, hotels like the Westin St. Francis, bakeries like the Noe Valley Bakery. There's caterers, grocery stores, hospitals, schools, startups, events and food festivals, Outside Lands, Beta Breakers. I mean, it makes me think about the fact that in San Francisco, there's so much going on a daily basis.
Oh, my God.
Thinking about this Salesforce event that was last week and all of the leftover food there. So if someone is interested in maybe letting their favorite restaurant or their company know about this, what's the best way
please.
To go about
oh,
it?
Oh, yeah, please. Just say, are you discarding any food? Remember that you can always call Food Runners.
And then, again, you say that you can sign up to be a regular volunteer. It's 1 hour a week, or you can choose to be on call, which means you'll be notified to see if you can fit a food run into your schedule that same day.
We have an app. An app that can notify you, or you can take it off the app. It's pretty cool.
So you basically drive to, for example, the hotel or the company,
yeah.
and then you get an address for the organization where to drop it off.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can sign up to take it or not. But I have one story, though.
Yeah.
That there was a woman who called me several years ago and said she couldn't be a food runner anymore because she was going on a diet. And I'm like, what? You mean you've been eating the muffins you've been picking up? So there's no, you can't eat the food. You have to deliver to the hungry.
Well, if you'd like to get involved with Food Runners, maybe you are on the side that has the food, or you know someone who could donate, or if you're interested in volunteering, you can get involved. There's a link at yourcallradio.org, or if you're not online, here's the phone number, 415-929-1866, 415-929-1866. And Mary Risley is founder of Food Runners, an incredible organization that picks up food from businesses and delivers it to agencies that feed people who are hungry in San Francisco. We're also joined today by Leslie Baccio, CEO of Second Harvest of Silicon Valley. According to the organization, 1 in 10 people in Silicon Valley receive food from Second Harvest. And if you'd like to join us, if you work for a group that feeds the hungry, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. What kind of need are you seeing in your area? And then if you have ever struggled with hunger or food security, or if you struggle now, we'd love to hear from you. What has been your experience in trying to get enough healthy food to eat? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet at yourcallradio. Now I would like to welcome Zamir Hassan to the show. Zamir is founder of Muslims Against Hunger, an organization that feeds the hungry and works to create awareness, compassion, and communal growth. In 2011, Zamir started the Hunger Van, a mobile soup kitchen in New Jersey for people who aren't able to go to a soup kitchen or a shelter for food. And Zamir Hassan joins us from WUCF in Orlando, Florida. Hi, Zamir. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ruth. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for your great work. Zamir, we've been talking about what things are like here in the Bay Area, and our guests have said that what they're seeing is people who have jobs are in need of food because rents are so high. What are you seeing in the Orlando area?
Let me go back a little bit, how I got involved, which will make some sense to you. I am an old IT guy, and I was in IT when IT did not exist. So I was invited by my son's school in New Jersey to be a chaperone to go to a soup kitchen in year 2000. And we fed like 200 people at the soup kitchen. I was literally shocked. They live in my backyard, and this is Morristown, New Jersey. It's the second richest town in New Jersey, which happens to be a bedroom for Wall Street. And I was literally shocked. And I said, wow, they live in my backyard. I don't even know about it. Mm-hmm. And I started talking about my community and a little congregation we had. And everybody said, where are you finding these people? We live in the richest country on the planet. So I took a group, and everybody was shocked because we live in silos. So we ended up regularly going to a soup kitchen program. Then I realized that the people who live near the soup kitchen can only come there, but the people who are not close by, they can't. So we are not reaching out to those people. So that's where I created this Hunger Van program, which is a mobile soup kitchen. Now, The mobile soup kitchen is in 30 cities and 7 countries. Orlando is one of our new areas. And the issue is that out of 319 million people we have in the richest country on the planet, there are 49 million people who don't know where they are going to get their next meal from. So asking the question you asked, what's going on in Orlando, it just happens that I am in Orlando because we are starting a new program here. But I am from New Jersey, essentially.
So what changes have you seen over the years, Amir? I mean, you started the Hunger Van back in 2011, right?
That's correct.
So what changes have you seen since then?
Since then, what I have seen, the numbers are going up. And there has been a big cut in the funding of hunger programs, food-related programs. And everybody is looking at government will do it, church will do it, synagogue will do it. But I tell you what I have learned, that we have to get involved at grassroots level because nobody else will deal with this. There is a big problem with senior hunger,
right.
And that's what I'm working on in Orlando area because I am living in a senior community. And it's if one partner dies, the other partner, guess what? Their bills are still the same. What are they cutting on?
Mm-hmm.
The food. And it's a national problem. And we have 49 million people who do not know where they are going to get their next meal, and everybody is looking at somebody else to do it. So Hunger Man program, we are not essentially what I keep telling the volunteers, that we are not in feeding business. We are trying to engage people to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's what is needed. And it's coming from, I'm typically not a social work guy. I'm an IT guy, and I got shocked when I found out in my neighborhood there's so much hunger, and that's where it started. So what Hunger Van is essentially doing is basically opening up new areas, finding people, get them engaged, and have them get involved with their neighbors to feed them.
You know, to your point, Zamir, talking about how people live in silos and your community was really shocked about just how bad this problem is, Leslie was talking about this earlier also, you know, in wealthy Silicon Valley where we have so many billionaires. Leslie, what will it take to raise awareness about this? Just to let people know how much need there is out there.
Well, I do think that one consequence of the housing crisis is that people are beginning to understand just how challenging it might be to live in this area if you're in a low-wage job. I mean, if you consider if you're making $15 an hour, which is typically the living wage in most of our communities, that's about $2,600 a month. But the average rent in Santa Clara County for a one-bedroom is $3,100 a month. So the math just doesn't work. And I think people, as soon as you start to tell that story, I think people begin to understand it.
And you make a great point, and you reminded me of a story that I read in the Chronicle last month, janitors versus coders. San Francisco created nearly as many low-wage jobs as high-paying tech gigs. So San Francisco often gets applause for its low unemployment rate, which is obviously great. But what we don't talk about is that so many of these jobs are low-wage jobs. And, you know, not everyone is making over $100,000 a year.
And that's right. And for those low-wage jobs, the wage increases just haven't kept up with the skyrocketing housing costs. So we think about how salaries generally in this community have gone up, but not for those low-wage workers.
And according to this piece, from 2016 to 2018, San Francisco and San Mateo counties added almost 44,000 low-wage jobs. And in this area, that's defined as an annual income below $68,000 a year. That's an 11% increase from 2016 to 2018.
That's right.
And driven by a 16% jump in food preparation positions.
It's crazy.
So these are the people that are making the food for the workers.
Yeah, and often having to drive from farther away to do it, or again, just struggling to live here in the community, figuring out other ways to cope.
today we're... go ahead, Zamir.
40% of the prepared food is thrown into garbage in this country. And there is a big issue. I have learned that there is a huge problem in students at colleges. The City University of New York has 25% people who fit into the definition of the people who don't know where they're going to give their food, get their food. Because after they pay these high fees, and it's like high rent and high fees in New York, they have no money left. And they are going hungry. 2 years ago, Governor Cuomo had passed a regulation where every college, City University of New York's campus, has a food bank.
Thank you for bringing that up, Zamir. That really has been a change for us over the past, 5 years. We've had a real focus on college hunger. In California, they estimate, they did a survey of students at California State University campuses and found that 40% were food insecure. So now we have food pantries at all our local community colleges. We're at 14 local colleges, including San Jose State. And we find the colleges are thrilled to have these programs because it's really helping kids stay enrolled. Of course, it helps increase graduation rates because if you're hungry, food, all you can think about is where you're going to get your next meal. And of course, it keeps you from really being able to focus on your studies and stay in school.
We did a show about college hunger back in August, and we cited a survey by the Hope Center for College Community and Justice. And they found that of the 167,000 students they surveyed, nearly half struggle to buy nutritious food. And the rates are higher for students of color, LGBTQ students, former foster youth, and those with a criminal record. And I watch video clips from our local news channels, and they do cover this on a regular basis. And just recently, one student said she and her friends were talking about how hungry they are, and some of them just rely on peanut butter.
Yeah.
Because it kind of gets them through the next couple of hours. I mean, this is in the Bay Area.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, most of us don't realize. You think of college students, you think of the traditional college student that's still dependent on their parents, that's going to school full time. That's not the reality for the majority of students today, especially at our community colleges, where they're having to afford college on their own. They're often juggling a couple of jobs to be able to pay their tuition. They're having to scramble to find housing. So food is often the first thing to go when they have to really trim their budgets.
Mary?
You're talking about the richest part of the country.
Exactly.
And what is happening, I was in North Carolina. They had like 30% student, University of North Carolina, their 30% of the kids have food issue.
Wow.
Or food insecurity, what the buzzword is.
Mm-hmm. Right, food insecurity. Didn't we get that term under the Bush administration? If I remember correctly, that's where it came from.
That could be.
Yeah, I'll look that up. But I'm pretty sure I remember the government decided to use that word food insecurity, which I thought was always strange. I mean, we're talking about people struggling to put food on the table. Mary, what do you think about that term?
Food insecurity? Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
But talking about peanut butter, I have a story. So so what you're talking about is the national hunger issue, and I'm talking about the local delivery issue. But so this young dad called up the food runner number and said he had a couple of jars of peanut butter and a bunch of apricots, preserved apricots, and where could he take them? See, we don't pick up at people's homes. And so I gave him the name of a soup kitchen in his area where he could take them, and it was very cool. So what I'd like everybody to know is there's no reason to throw away good food.
Right.
We're living in an era where people are starting to cook with beet greens and the tops of celery and all. They're making, you can make stuff with everything. You don't have to. What I find is really hard is that nobody knows how to cook anymore. And the rich kids are having their food delivered. There are restaurants in San Francisco that don't even serve food. They're just delivery restaurants. It's crazy.
You know, can I get in the middle here? Because what Hunger Man has done, come up with something where if you can boil water, you are the best cook in town. So we pack these 20-ounce bags of casserole, quinoa, lentils, rice, pink Himalayan salt, and cumin in 20-ounce bags. So if a person is able to boil water, they could get this nutritious food done in 25 minutes. So we have to really go away from the traditional way of dealing with this stuff. We have to come up with some new ways of dealing this thing.
We are having
events all over the country at campuses where we bring volunteers, we bring all the supplies, and all I need, set up, give me a couple of tables and six volunteers. In an hour, I'll pack 100 bags, and that's 1,000 meals. So if I give one of these bags, three bags to a person, they are able to eat every day for the whole month. So we have to have some creative ways of doing things. The traditional way is, it's not that the money doesn't come from Washington. There is a lot of money comes for the student hunger, and half of that money is never used. So because any time, you know, the government gets involved and big corporations get involved, it just slows everything down. So we have to have, and that's what Hunger Van is trying to do, engage grassroots people, get them involved of doing as we just heard about people can go and pick up the food and deliver it to somebody.
Well, what's nice about what you just described, Zamir, is that is a very healthy meal with the quinoa, the lentils, the rice, and the cumin. And I think that over the years, food has gotten healthier, but in some cases, it's not very healthy.
You know what has happened, especially the people who have issues with food, they end up eating whatever they get.
Right.
So they have no option to choose there. So what we have done, and I keep telling to the volunteers, this is not about food, what we are doing. I want you guys to get involved and feed Mrs. Smith, who's hungry in your neighborhood. Because Mrs. Smith's husband used to work for AT&T. He passed away. AT&T went out of business. And she's going hungry. And nobody talks about Mrs. Smith, because people don't even know that she exists. I know because she's my neighbor. So we have to have a grassroots people get involved with each other within their neighborhood and do something about it.
That's one of the things I love about the food bank is we have partnerships with over 300 nonprofits. We have 1,000 distribution points across the two counties we serve, and we have so many people engaged in really making a difference. But I'm glad you brought up that point about nutrition. And that term food insecurity really comes from, I think, trying not to describe the situation as hunger, because people wonder, well, what does hunger really look like in this country? And a lot of times it looks like malnourishment or not having access to nutritious food. Just last month, I met a mother at one of our evening pantries, and she was describing to me how she works. She's a single mom. She has three kids. She works full time. She just had her rent just went up $200 or $300 a month. And she said, since then, every single night, I've been having to take my kids to get fast food. And she's like, that's really all we've been able to afford on the budget we're on. And she was thrilled to be there waiting in line at the food pantry, knowing now she can get fresh produce every week, because she loves to cook, and she was unhappy about having to resort to fast food, but that was her only choice. And you think about how that has the short-term consequence of the kids not being able to concentrate well in school, not being able to do well, but also the long-term health consequences of that, of having to have fast food for dinner every night. And so that's kind of what hunger looks like a lot of times in our community.
Can I interrupt? Can you explain to everybody the difference between a food bank and a food pantry?
Sure. Thank you, Mary. So it is very confusing because many people refer to food banks in their neighborhoods. So we are a food bank that serves two counties, and we provide our food to other smaller organizations that then distribute it. And when I say food pantry, it really looks like a kind of just-in-time farmers market distribution that we do at schools, we do at community centers, we do at CalWorks, we do anywhere in the community where there are people in need and we have a partner who's willing to host a distribution. And so a lot of times people call that thing down the street from you a food bank or a food pantry. We're starting to try to call them free community markets to better describe what's happening there. But that's where you can come and receive free food.
We're going to take a quick break. That is Leslie Baccio, CEO of Second Harvest of Silicon Valley. 1 in 10 people in Silicon Valley receive food from Second Harvest. Leslie is former COO of the San Francisco Marin Food Bank. 1 in 5 residents in San Francisco and Marin need food assistance. Mary Risley is founder of Food Runners, a grassroots organization that picks up excess food from businesses and grocery stores and catering companies. The list is pretty long. And then they deliver it to agencies feeding people who are hungry in San Francisco. And you can get involved whether you're work for a company that has excess food, or if you want to volunteer, you can do it once a week. It's about an hour a week, or you can be on call. So you would drive to, say, a business, and then you would drive to drop off the food at an organization. Find information at yourcallradio.org. Zamir Hassan is founder of Muslims Against Hunger and the Hunger Van. It's a mobile soup kitchen in New Jersey for people who are not able to go to a soup kitchen or a shelter for food. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective that you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. You can also send an email to yourcall@kalw.org. or post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org, or tweet us at yourcallradio. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. That'll be the topic on the 11 o'clock show, 1A, 1/2 hour from now, here on 91.7 KALW.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. As we begin the holidays, we wanted to check in with those on the front lines in the fight against hunger. And today we're joined by Leslie Baccio, CEO of Second Harvest of Silicon Valley. 1 in 10 people in Silicon Valley receive food from Second Harvest. Mary Risley is founder of Food Runners, a grassroots organization that picks up excess food from businesses, catering companies, even schools, and then delivers it to agencies feeding the hungry in San Francisco. Zamir Hassan is founder of Muslims Against Hunger and the Hunger Van, a mobile soup kitchen in New Jersey for people who cannot go to a soup kitchen or a shelter for food. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you're involved in a group that feeds people, we'd love to hear from you. What changes are you seeing? And every time we do this show, we always ask, what will it take to alleviate this problem and then end hunger in the United States? And then if you've ever been in a situation or are in a situation where you're in need of food, what has your experience been like and trying to access healthy, nutritious food? 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet at yourcallradio. Let's hear from Andrea. Hi, Andrea. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I just want to say I'm the pizza lady here in San Francisco. I adopted a place that gives me all their food, and I spend my days just feeding folks directly in the alley. And Mary Risley, who is my idol and champion, I just want to bring up one perspective. A lot of places are afraid to give food because they think somebody is going to get sick and turn around and sue them and blah, blah, blah. And it's so untrue. When they give to me, I assume liability and I'm protected by Good Samaritan laws, but so are they. And I the one thing I'd like to get out there on this wonderful program you're doing is that anybody can give food to anyone and be protected. And I'm trying to encourage everybody to adopt a place in their own neighborhood and get the leftovers and bring directly to people so that they know where it's from, how old it is, they have the dignity to say yes or no. These are for the people who can't, who aren't well enough to get to the soup kitchens directly.
Right. Thank you so much, Andrea, for calling in, and thanks for the great work you do. We briefly talked about this earlier, Mary, but can you elaborate on what...
I think she's done a fabulous job.
Yeah.
There should be no fear of liability. It takes a long... bad food. You know what happens when you get bad food? You feel you have an upset stomach for 2 days. Mm-hmm. It's not going to kill you. Mm-hmm. The problem is if there's a piece, if somebody, a broken glass in the food or something like that. But it just doesn't happen.
Right.
It just doesn't happen. And good going, Andrea. That's fabulous what you're doing.
And again, as Andrea said, talk to your local cafe or restaurant and say, hey, you know, everybody throws food away, right? Mm-hmm. So what do you do with this leftover food and then connect them to food runners?
Well, a funny story, too, is that if you came out of a restaurant with half your turkey sandwich or half your thing and you offered it to a guy on the street, the chances are he would say, I'm a vegan. I'm lacto intolerant. I'm gluten free. San Francisco homeless are the pickiest eaters.
We only serve vegan food because I'm a vegan.
Hey, Zamir, did you want to jump in there?
Yeah. You know, you mentioned something about vegan. So,
yeah.
We only strictly serve vegan food because I'm a vegan. So I have no issue people taking our food. And one thing, let me throw in, you keep saying Hunger Van is in New Jersey. Hunger Van can show up anywhere. Anybody listening, go on our website, invite Hunger Van. We will show up and pack quinoa, lentil, rice with you anywhere in the country.
Wow.
So just go to the hungervan.org.
Leslie and I want it
and
now.
And invite us. It's called Hosting the Hunger Van. Invite Hunger Van to come, and we will work with you to make food, and you give it out to your community where you are. Because the whole idea of Hunger Van is that once we do it with you, we are teaching you how you can get involved and how could you take care of Mrs. Smith in your neighborhood.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for that, Zamir. Well, we have a link to the Hunger Van at yourcallradio.org if anyone wants to get involved with you. And I think that the point you make about what you said, Mary, because people have asked me when I've given food, well, what's in that? I mean, the nice thing about offering vegan food is anyone can really eat it, right?
Yep.
So, and I understand you became vegan after you got Lyme disease 25 years ago, Zamir?
Yeah, that's where I started, and I started looking into healthy food, and I became vegan. Mm. And I have a friend of mine, Larry Fleming. He had opened 35 vegan restaurants all over the world, so I bumped into him on Wall Street. He had a restaurant, and he's a big supporter of our program now. He's giving us food all over. Basically, he's running our program in Nigeria.
Wow, that's great. Well, thank you again for calling in, Andrea. Let's go next to Elkhorn in San Francisco. Hi, Elkhorn. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. My question is, what about all the slightly damaged food that supermarkets throw away? You know, you get a pear with a little ding on it, out it goes.
There's an interesting group in San Francisco called Imperfect Foods that are it's what doesn't go on the grocery shelf that's the big one, is because of the consumers don't want an apple that's too small or something like that, but that's a really good point that we as consumers we shouldn't be so picky. We don't have to have perfect food.
Well, that's a lot of the produce that we get at the food bank. So when I mentioned 50% of the food that we distribute as fresh produce, we are literally getting that from packers and growers, and that is maybe sunburnt apples or oversized oranges or undersized oranges or maybe really crazy-looking carrots, perfectly delicious produce that otherwise would not go to a Safeway or would not be deemed good enough for some of our retailers, and that food comes to us literally by the tractor trailer load. If you could picture it, every single week we receive like 20 tractor trailer loads of this produce, and we use volunteers to sort through it, to cull out the bad stuff, to repack it so we can get it right back out to families and individuals. But we also pick up from retailers. So we pick up from over 100 retailers, and just like the caller described, we're picking up oftentimes produce that's left over, but we're also picking up milk that's close to expiration, meat that's close to expiration that they'll freeze to us for us, and we'll pick it up. And this is really high-quality product. It is more difficult for us to handle. And right now in California, there's a new state bill, SB 1383, that's going to require by 2025 that all retailers reduce their compostable waste by 20%. So they are highly incented now to actually make sure that product is not getting wasted, that it's going to people that can use it. So we are working with our counties and working with retailers to try to get more creative about how we can capture more of that product and get it right back out to people. 65% of what we distribute at the food bank is unsold food that we are repurposing to give to individuals so it doesn't go to landfill.
And Mary, you also work with a number of groups. Just 1 minute, Zamir. I just wanted to ask Mary a question connected to our caller. You're working with grocery stores also.
Oh, yeah. We've been picking up every day at Whole Foods since it opened in San Francisco. Molly Stone's, Whole Foods, Trader Joe's is an unbelievable donor. They donate fresh flowers and meat, and they don't want publicity about it. They're just good there. But I think a huge thing is that, we have to train the consumer that they don't have to have everything perfect. But also I want every business in San Francisco to know they don't have to throw any food in the compost. In fact, it's cheaper to donate it than to compost it. Currently, food runners in San Francisco, we estimate we're picking up 18 tons of food that would otherwise be thrown away.
Wow.
And the difference between me and what Leslie's talking about is that we're picking up sandwiches, soups, salads, birthday cake, whatever anybody wants to donate. So she's dealing with basically food that you cook with, and we're dealing with food that might already be cooked.
And when you drop the food off, what kinds of organizations are you taking this food to?
Well, we take to St. Anthony's and Glide and St. Vincent's of Paul, those kind of things. But one of my favorites is a soup kitchen on Potrero called Martin DePore's, where they have volunteers making soup every day for 150 people. And I went in there the other day to deliver some food, and these cute little older ladies gave me a plate of soup and salad, say, come eat with us. You know, it's everybody. Everybody should get free food.
Zamir, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah. You know, the point I want to make is the food runners should be everywhere all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the food supply, the resource from that angle is not an issue at all. The issue is the distribution. And the only way distribution can happen everywhere where people are hungry, the food runners type organizations have to be there. And food, so you guys are doing great, but you're doing in one little part of the country.
It's 8 miles wide.
just 8 miles. But the food runner should be basically. I would help you to open the food runners, anywhere you want to open that, because that's what the issue is. The issue is the distribution. The food is not an issue. 40% of the prepared food is thrown away. It's the distribution. Us to get involved. Individuals to get involved, and food runners should be in every city.
It should be in many cities at every
campus.
Yeah.
That's the main issue. So focusing on where the food is good food, bad food, that's not the issue. The issue is the distribution. How do you reach out to those? One thing I finish, in the city University of New York food pantries. I was there, we packed some food, and I was told that the students don't come. You know why?
Hmm.
Because
what?
The pride. They don't want to know that they are going hungry. So we are creating a new program where we are inviting from campus and asking the volunteers, hey, take this with you.
Wow. What about that?
Stigma is a huge issue. That is one of the biggest barriers.
And especially old people, stigma is a big issue. They are going hungry, and they will not go to a place which is called food pantry or soup kitchen or whatever. And
sure.
They are going hungry.
I mean, we're in a culture that really prides independence, and so it's very hard for people to admit that they need help, or oftentimes they see people as others as being even more desperate than they are, so they don't want to take away resources from somebody else. And so at the food bank, we're doing a lot to try to get the word out that we are welcoming to everyone. We open up food distributions closer to where people already are. We're now at 87 affordable housing complexes. So we find if you're in a community where everybody is eligible, where it kind of becomes a normal that, oh, you can come and get free groceries down at the community room once a week, that's something that takes some of that stigma away. We serve 142 K-12 public schools. And so at these schools, again, these are often communities where everyone is eligible, and it becomes something that's more like a community event, and that helps take the stigma away. We're looking at just how to present the food in a way where it looks more like a free farmer's market than the image of a pantry, which is kind of canned goods shoved away somewhere. This is actually beautiful product. And so that's what we also want to get the word out to your listeners about, is that if you're in need of help, reach out to your local food bank. At Second Harvest of Silicon Valley, you can go to our website. There you can find out how to get connected to a distribution near you. Or you can also call our Food Connection hotline. And we have people who speak Chinese, Vietnamese, Tagalog, Spanish. And we have folks, again, who can help you get connected to a location near you.
Well, thank you again for calling in, Elkhorn. We have an email from Howard who says, as a senior citizen living on Social Security, I can attest to the great work your guests do. I enjoyed food supplied by food runners when I lived in SROs in the Mission. Now I live in Hunter's View, where every Friday the food bank delivers a bounty of fresh fruits and veggies, rice, pasta, breads, some kind of protein. My heartfelt thanks to everyone. By the way, when I lived in New York in the 1980s, I saw the following sentence on a bus shelter: put food out. When people come to get it, organize them.
Very cool.
That's great.
That's a very good email.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Howard.
Often when you go to these food distributions, too, you'd be surprised that it is more like a community event. It isn't a place where people look really downtrodden and sad to be there. It actually, what you see is people really connecting with one another, especially at these senior sites. Oftentimes there'll be music. Again, there'll be many of the clients are volunteering there to help give out food. We have other volunteers from the community, and it's more like a celebration.
Well, thank you, Howard. Nice to hear from you. We have another email from Alicia. For East Bay folks, Berkeley Food Network delivers fresh food to pantries all over, including schools. Go to berkeleyfoodnetwork.org to get involved. Thank you for that, Alicia. And Kim writes, your guest said that we need to think outside the box. Unlike other avenues, John Bon Jovi and his wife now have a chain of restaurants where you pay $20 for a full 8-course meal. She writes it's excellent food. If you can't pay for your meal, you work it off by doing dishes, bussing tables, seating, etc. What if we start or have a restaurant like that in San Francisco, especially with all the famous people we have here in the Bay Area? Thoughts? Have you heard about this?
You could have it at my house.
You know, there is a chain of restaurants around the country now. They are called cafes, and they offer free food. It's like a regular cafe, and they have one or two dishes for free. So you could just order there and say, I will take that. So that's kind of growing, and we need to really work out of the box and create these creative ways of doing this. Like on the college campus, you know, the dining rooms, you know, they give out big contracts. They can require in the contract that there has to be one free item, soup or something. So there has to be a creative way of doing that.
Right. We actually have a show coming up in a couple weeks about the lunches that are fed to school children, and in many cases just how unhealthy they are, and this movement to ensure that they are healthy. And to that point, Zamir, there's another kitchen called the Karma Kitchen, where you don't pay at all. It's a volunteer-driven restaurant. There's a number of these kitchens all over the United States, a lot in India, and then some in Europe. So that's another one to look up and spread the word about, the Karma Kitchen. I also wanted to ask you, just briefly before we end, there's a lot of talk about the Trump administration pushing $4.5 billion in food benefit cuts. So this would really affect people on SNAP. What can you tell us about that?
That's right. We haven't really talked about SNAP. And of course, SNAP, which was formerly known as food stamps and is known as CalFresh here in California, is really the best way people can receive food assistance, because you receive dollars on an electronic benefits card that you can use at the grocery store. So that is another huge piece of what we do at the food bank, is to try to help get folks connected with CalFresh, and also how to fight against these cuts. You are right that we are faced with an administration that is really looking for lots of ways to make it harder for people to access this benefit. And already that benefit is really grossly inadequate for people here in California, because it is not adjusted for the cost of living. And so it's a really critical benefit. Not enough people are eligible, and the benefit amount you receive is really not enough to be able to make it here. That's why food banks still have to supplement. But if CalFresh or SNAP is cut, that will just be more and more of a burden on the nonprofit food providers like those of us on the call.
Well, we'll definitely do a show about SNAP in the new year to update listeners. Final thoughts from all of you. What can we do so we're not doing this show every year and seeing these huge numbers? Just briefly, Leslie, what changes would you like to see?
Well, certainly, you know, what I love about the food bank is we do involve so many folks, and really it takes so many people to make this happen. And so please go to our website. There are lots of ways you can volunteer. You can volunteer at one of our sites to give out food. You can volunteer at one of our warehouses to help sort and repack it. Of course, we rely on financial donations. Less than 5% of our donations come from the government. The rest are from private sources. And for every dollar donated, we can provide two nutritious meals. Because so much of our food is donated, because we rely on volunteers, we can really stretch your dollars.
Mary?
I think that Leslie makes a very good point about volunteering, and if you can't volunteer, donate money. But if you go to foodrunners.org, there's a video there of what to do with your leftover turkey and vegetables. So I say, think about making the most of the food that you do buy. Think about cooking a pot of turkey with beans and vegetables and taking it to your local shelter. Think about giving any way you can to make sure that everybody gets fed. I don't know what I can do about homelessness. I don't know what I can do about world hunger, but in this area, we should help feed our fellow citizens.
And Zamir, we've got about 20 seconds left.
Yes, I would say get involved. Go to our website, hungervan.org, and we also have another website, kidscouts.org. Look at how you can get involved. We have all of our programs listed there, and we could come to you and get you involved and teach you how to get involved.
Zamir Hassan is founder of Muslims Against Hunger and the Hunger Van. Mary Risley is founder of Food Runners. Leslie Baccio is CEO of Second Harvest of Silicon Valley. Thank you all for your great work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.